concluded yesterday's shiur on the bottom of Lamed Hey Amud Aleph, about 6 lines up from the bottom, 7 lines up, with the sugya of Shuma. The Gemara does come to the conclusion, Halacha L'maisa, that Shuma Hadar, which means if Reuven owes a debt to Shimon and Shimon wants to collect that debt, but Reuven doesn't have any cash to pay Shimon, then in that case, Beis Din will confiscate a piece of real estate, property, a karka of Reuven in lieu of the chov that he defaults on. And that karka is evaluated by Beis Din, and after a long process, the malva, the balchov, let's call him Shimon, has rights to possess that piece of karka. Now, Reuven lost his karka in lieu of the fact that he had no cash to pay up Shimon and pay his debt. What happens if Reuven comes into money? He works hard, and now he has some liquid assets. Does he have rights to redeem, so to speak, his karka from Shimon and get it back? And Rava initially understood from the Horah of Rav Nachman, in the case of the Nizamim, where the Shomer paid for the Nizamim, he didn't have money to pay for the Nizamim that he was a Shomer on, and Rav Nachman confiscated his afande, his mansion, and then ultimately Rav Nachman returned the mansion, and it would seem, says Rava, that he did so because Shuma Hadar. And it's very interesting because Shomer himself would have had vested interests here financially to have rights to these Nizamim. Now, what thought would have crossed our minds? Why would we entertain the possibility that the Shomer would have rights to these Nizamim once they're located, and decide, you know, I'd rather keep the Nizamim and let the Mafkid, the former original owner of the Nizam, let him keep my mansion? And what basis, what havamina should there be that he could make such a claim? And the answer is that since he did such a great favor to the Mafkid by paying up for his object, therefore there should be a hakna on a quid pro quo, reciprocal hakna on the part of the mafkid. Now you might ask me, but we know that, at least according to many shitas, if witnesses come in and testify that the shomer is chayov, then there's no haknas kefil, because the shomer didn't do any great favor on behalf of the mafkid by paying up. The edim testified that he have to pay up. And here also, Lechora, if the Shomer couldn't find the Nizamim, that's his Pshia, and he has to pay up. In other words, the Bala Nizamim, the Mafkid, came and he said, give me my Nizamim back, return them to me. And the Shomer, you know, his jaw drops and he says, I don't have it. So at that point, he's Chayev, it's the equivalent to Eden. And Rabbi Kivega points out over here that the reason why, or the possible havmin of a basis for the Shomer claiming hakna here, is not because he paid up initially, but because he could have said nenas mimeni, and he would be believed. What does that mean, nenas mimeni? Let's say the Shomer initially says, I don't have the pikadon, I can't find the object you gave me, in this case the jewelry, the earrings, but now I found them. But after I found them, they were lost ba'onis, and a shomer is potter from onis. Says Rabbi Kivega, in such a case where the shomer says he found it and then there was an onis, he would be believed and he'd be potter. And therefore, if he's willing to pay for those nizamim, then Rav in our sugya holds that there should be a hakna of the pikadon to the shomer. And once it's haknah to the shomer, L'chora, the Shomer should not be forced to take back the mansion if he wants to hold on to the Nizamim insofar as the Nizamim appreciated in value. And therefore Rava came to the conclusion that the factor of Nachman was of the opinion that the Baal HaNizamim could get back his Nizamim by paying up the mansion and returning it to the Shomer, that itself proves that Shuma Hadar. We're guaranteeing the Baal HaNizamim, the Mafkid, rights of redemption. Despite the fact, again, that Beis Din did a Shuma here on the karka of the Shomer. And Rava realized after a while that this psak of Rav Nachman was not based on Shuma Hadar. And he said, Hasam lo achuche lebeidina hacha achuche lebeidina, meaning that the Shomer for sure never had rights to claim ownership over these Nizamim through halacha of Hakna, because the Shomer forced the Mafkid to take recourse to Beis Din and sue him for the Nizamim in Beis Din. And even though Rava himself elsewhere, not here but in Masechet Bava Kama, is of the opinion that, let's say, a Shomer takes a Shvua in Beis Din, but then afterwards he pays up, despite the Shvua, he does get a Haknas, Hapikot Haknas Kefel, but that's different because there he paid Mirtzono. Here, what happened was the Rav Nachman forcefully confiscated the mansion, the traklin of the Shomer Bal Korcha against his will, and therefore he never was willing to pay up for the Nizamim. He never had Hakna on the part of the Mafki. The Mafki would ever be Makna him. The Ritva here asks Akasha, what was Rava thinking to compare our case where there was where the Shomer was Matriach the Mafki to come to Beis Din, to our Mishnah here of Haknas Kefel at the beginning of Perek HaMafkid, which is a case where the Shomer paid on his own initiative, Shashile Miatzma? And the answer is because Rava over there in Bava Kama, as we indicated a minute ago, holds that if after he takes the Shvu in Beis Din, the Shomer pays, again he has to be willing to pay on his own without forcing him, then he does get Kefel. In any event, the Gemara says, Lememer de Sovra of Nachman de Shuma Hadar, meaning that since the Shomer was unwilling to pay, therefore Rav Nachman did a Shuma on his karak, on his traklin, and nevertheless he, the Shomer, has rights to redeem his traklin, and that's why Rav Nachman at the end of the day return the traklin back to the Shomer. So that means Shuma Hadar. And the Chiddush, as we said in the previous year of Shuma Hadar, is that we don't view the confiscation of the karka as collection of a chov, as a maisa Beis Din which cannot be reversed. No, there was a tnai in that maisa Beis Din awarding the mischayev with a schus pedia, with rights to be poda, and that's called Shuma Hadar. The Ramban here is in doubt. He says, if this is Midin Shuma Hadar, why are they returning the traklin against the will of the Shomer? The Shomer really wants to hold on to the Nizamim, and the heck with the mansion, the traklin, because he gets a better deal on the Nizamim. Now, the whole idea of a schus pedia, if you hold Shuma Hadar, means that the person from whom we confiscated and collected is equipped and is bequeathed, if you will, with a right to redeem. But in this case, Adarabba, he's yelling and screaming this this shomer that he would rather hold on to the nizamin. That's the Ramban's kash. And the Ramban says, in truth, Enochinami, if the shomer decides he doesn't want his mansion back after they made a shuma, and it was used as collection to the Bala Nizamim, to the Mafkid, then the Mafkid will simply pay that value, that cash value of the Shuma of the Traklin, and he, the Mafkid, will hold on and retain his possession over the Traklin. Here in this case, however, there's no question that Nizamim Vadai go back to the Mafkid. There's no reason why the Mafkid should give up his ownership on the Nizamim, and therefore it makes sense, and we can assume that the Shomer wants his Traklin back. Now, the Rashba points out that if the Halacha or Shuma ain't a Chose, ain't a Hadar, Lo Hadar, if I understand the Rashba correctly, and the Shomer wants to hold on to the Nizamim, he doesn't want to be poda his mansion, his afandiki, then he will have to pay not only the value of the current value of the, I'm sorry, not only the original value of the earrings as they were worth at the time that the Shomer took it as a deposit, that the Nizam would deposit it in his possession, but he would have to pay the higher value of today after the Nizamim appreciated on the market. And in that, if that be the case, then Enochinami at that point, once he pays the higher price, the Afanda would remain in the possession of the Baal Akipi, Baal HaNizamim. Now, there's one other point that we have to make over here. The Gemara says that Shiny Hasam the Shuma Bitas Havi the Kavi Kipi Meikara, that the halach of Shuma here doesn't apply. Then Bezin evaluated the Afandiki only because they were of the impression that the Nizamim were lost and they had to collect money or real estate in lieu of money from the Shomer to pay for his Pshia as a Shomer on the Kipi, on the Nizamim. But in truth, the Kipi were never lost. And now that they were located, they were temporarily misplaced. The entire Shuma from the get-go was a Tos. So to say Shuma Hadar and Lo Hadar, when the Shuma was Betos, that doesn't make sense. That's not relevant. Now, here's an interesting question. What about Peros? The Karka, the Traklin, let's say, was in the hands of the Mafkid as a result of Rav Nachman's Horah to collect this Karka in lieu of the Nizamim that were lost. What if that Karka produces Peros? Who gets those Peros? And it would seem Pashtus from the Sugya later on, and the Ritva points this out here, that the Shomer, the original owner of this Karka, will not only get back his karka, he'll even get back the payrolls of the karka. Now that's not so in the case of Shuma Hadar. In other words, if let's say Reuven was chayev to Shimon and Bezdin confiscated Reuven's property and gave it to Shimon, now Shimon redeems it, in such a case, Reuven, although he redeems his karka from Shimon, he doesn't get the payrolls of the karka. Because the entire halacha that equips the mischayev from whom we collected, confiscated his karka, that he has rights to redeem it, is based on vasisa yoshva tov. But it's not yoshva tov to force the malveh, right, the balchov, to cough up the peros. Here, in our case, the Ritva points out, the owner of the traklin, the owner of the karka, meaning the shomer, has rights to the peros because the whole shuma was betos. But when the shuma was a valid, reliable, effective shuma, just that there's halacha of redemption, of pedia, that's called shuma hadar, then enochinami, at least for the time being, meaning until Bezdin implements this Tanai in the original Shuma that the Mischayev has rights to be Poda, until that gets implemented, the Karka through the Shuma of Bezdin belongs to the Malva, meaning to the one to whom he was Chayev. And therefore he collects the Peros. Now, what we mentioned at the end of yesterday's Shia is that according to Narda, Shuma is Hadar, but only up to 1 year. And this reminds me of the halacha of Mechiras Bayis Be'ir Mukefes Choma, where the Torah says that if you sell a piece of property in Eretz Yisrael, in a city that's walled, then the seller. The seller is equipped with redemption rights. He can, if he wants to get back his field, his bias that he sold, he has rights to do so up to 12 months. So now that Bezdin did a kind of mechira in the case of Shuma, in a sense, selling the karka of the lova to the malva, of the meschayev to the balachov, that sale is a conditional sale that equips the original owner, meaning the meschayev, with a right of redemption for up to 12 months. That's Nardoy. Amemar says that even though he too is from the city of Nardoy, he's of the opinion that Shuma Hadali Olam, and that's how the Gemara Paskins, and it's all based on Vasisa Hayosher Vatov, which is a pasuk at the beginning of Devarim in Parshas Vaschanan, and it's Yosher Vatov to allow a person to redeem his field that was confiscated in lieu of a chov once he has the cash assets to give the mal for the money that's coming to him. And this is a separate takanas chachamim based on Vasisa Vayosha Tov to bequeath to this mischayev a schus pedia, allowing him to redeem his chov. It's interesting, we're going to see soon that if, let's say, this lova who's equipped with this schus pedia by virtue of the halach of Shuma Hadar dies, then even his children, they, by process of Yerusha, inherit their father, the late father's rights to be poda, and they can poda the karga from the malva. In any event, the Gemara says the following: Pshita shamule lebalchov viozal iu v'shama lebalchov didei. So in this case, they collected a piece of karka, let's say from the lova, in lieu of his default of a chov to the malva. Now the malva himself, in this case, owes a chov to someone else. So there's the first malva, we'll call him Shimon, and the second malva, which is Levi. And now, what happens is the karka was given over to Levi. So the original owner of this karka is Reuven. Reuven borrowed money and couldn't pay back Shimon. Shimon now borrowed money from Levi now confiscates this piece of karka that was originally Reuven's that is now in the possession of Shimon. And the Gemara says, Pshita, in such a case, the Amrinan lay lo adif at mi gavra di osis mine. We tell Levi that you don't have a superior position, your position is not stronger than Shimon, from whom you collected this karka. And just like Shimon himself, still in terms of his ownership, the karka has a rifyon viado, you know, the karka is not completely his, because together with his acquisition of the karka comes a schus pedia for Reuven, you know, the original lova. That's schus pedia of lova, of the lova, meaning of Reuven, is inherent in this karka, and the second balchov, in this case Levi, collects or confiscates this karka from Shimon with those same conditions and with the aprons attached back to Reuven, so that now Reuven can come and redeem his karka from Levi, even though again Levi had no direct business with Reuven. He never met Reuven. He doesn't recognize him, but it doesn't matter. he has to understand that when he gets this karka, he gets this karka with this chus pedia built in, inherent to the karka itself. And the Gemara continues with case number two. Zabna urta viyava bimatana. We now have three cases. Number one, where Shimon the Baal Chov, who confiscated, or as I say, Beis Din confiscated on his behalf a karka of Reuven. Reuven's the Mischayev, the Lova. And he sold it. After all, once Shimon confiscates the karka, he has a right to sell it, which he went ahead and did. Or perhaps, in scenario number two, Nebuch Shimon died, and now Shimon's son inherited his father. Or, case number three, Shimon, after collecting this karka, gave it as a gift to Levi. Says the Gemara, in these three cases, Vade Hani Me Kora Daiti the Aranochas, Falava Daiti the Zuze Nochas. There's no Schus Pedia. That Schus Pedia is completely gone up in thin smoke, because in these three cases, the person gets the karka, and again, the Gemara puts the emphasis here on das. I'm not exactly sure why the das here is relevant, but the lokeach who purchased the karka from Shimon, or Shimon's son, we'll call him Chanoch ben Shimon, who inherited the karka from his father, or Levi, who received the karka as a gift, these three have a das to receive the karka in an irreversible way, in a total way, without any strings attached. And I think what the Gemara is saying here, from the perspective of the Takonis Chachom of Schus Pedia, to the original Lover, the original Mischai, we'll call him Reuven, that Schus Pedia was instituted by the Chachamim, and what was pushing the Chacham to do so was the Pasuk Vasisa Vayoshva Tov. We want to be good to the original owner and grant him a right to redeem his karka when he gets the monies to do so. But there's a limit. You know, he can't do it at the expense of others who came into this karka and acquired it as if it was, you know, as if there was a new story here in the history of the karka that began with Shimon. They don't go back to the original history of the story that this karka once belonged to Reuven. That's not their business. So it would not be Yoshev Tov to confiscate the karka from these three people. And it's not similar to the case of taking it from the Baal Chov, meaning when Reuven redeems it from Shimon, his malva, because really what was Reuven chayv to Shimon? He was chayv domim, he was chayv monies to begin with. Ella what? He didn't have domim, so he paid up with karka. Now Shimon is going to get back his domim, his currency, his cash from Reuven. So let Reuven, you know, be nice to Reuven, let him get his karka back, because the original deal was one of domim, and now you're getting back your domim. That's not really applicable in the cases of a lokeach, a yoresh, and a makabel. These three categories of individuals, they want the karka. And that was their original deal. They came into this picture, so to speak, this din mamon, from their desire and their connection to the karka. And therefore, it's not fair to go back into ancient history and say, well, Reuven once owned the karka, therefore he has rights to redeem and get this karka back. Not from them. His rights are limited to his Baal Chov. And therefore, as Tosus points out, in Dibur Maschil Zabna, that the normal halacha called Ma Mocha Rishon L'Sheni Kol Zchus Shetov L'Yodo, that means that in this case, when Shimon sells the karka to Levi, what he sells is whatever he owns in the karka, and he has a limitation in his ownership of the karka, insofar as Shimon will have to fork over the karka, return it to Reuven if Reuven redeems it. That doesn't apply over here. Because basically, if not for Vasisa Vayosha Tov, even Shimon himself would have a complete, total kinyan on the karka, irreversible, without any strings attached. Ella what? You're applying Vasisa Vayosha Tov to give the mischayev, meaning the lov of Reuven, rights to be poda, but that's vis-a-vis Shimon. That's nothing to do with Levi. When Levi bought this karka from Shimon, or Levi inherited the karka from Shimon, or Levi received the karka as a gift from Shimon. Fine, all that is pretty clear. But now we get into the more complicated scenario. Shamu lo le'isha. Somebody borrowed money from a woman. He's the lover. She's the malver. The insiva, and now she gets married. So what happened? After this fellow borrows money from, we'll call her Leah, and the Lova defaults on the loan, Beis Din evaluated the karka of the Lova and confiscated his karka, awarding it to the Balchov, in this case the Balaschov, to the Isha. And then in Siva she got married. Now, once she gets married, within the framework of Ksuba, the karka that she brings into the marriage now, to some extent, partially at least, transfers into the ownership of the Baal. And that's called Nichsei Maluk. Again, there are certain cases where they actually evaluate the karka before the marriage, and that value is written in the Ksuba. That's called Nichsei Tzom Barzel. Then the Baal owns the karka totally. But rather, this was left out of the ksuba, which means the stoma, if it's left out of the ksuba, it's nichsei malug. She owns the keren, the basic karka, and he, the Baal, owns the peros. So that's scenario number one within this third category. Scenario number two is oshamu mina de'isha. In this case, she borrowed money from someone else, and that someone else, insofar as she defaulted on the loan, confiscated her karka, the insiva, and she got married. Now, the issue here is, what's the status of the Baal with regard to the halacha of Shuma in the case of Nichsei Maluk, where he owns the Peros, but she owns the Keren? Does he, the Baal, have a status of, let me try to say it this way, does he have the same status as she does? And therefore, just like she had a Shamula Leisha Kaka Bechov Shahayu Chayovim La, let's say in the first case, she collected this karka, and now the Lova, who had borrowed money, who owed a chov to her in the first of these two scenarios, he has redemption rights from the Isha. Do those redemption rights extend to the Baal as well? Because the Baal now is the replacement of the Isha. Or do we say no, that within the framework of the Ksuba, within the framework of the marriage, he, the Baal, is a lokeach who now acquires a new ownership in this karka? It's almost as if she sold the karka to him, or gave the karka to him, and he's not in any way connected. His kinyan on this karka there's no string attached to the karka as far as he's concerned as a lokeach back to the original owner of this karka, meaning the lova who borrowed money from his wife. So again, if we would say, this is tif, if we would say that the Baal is really the replacement of his wife, just like the lova had schus pedia, kashuma hodar, from the wife, vis-a-vis the wife, he now has chus pedia from the husband, nothing has changed by virtue of the marriage in terms of the lova's ability to demand and claim back his karka if he has cash to pay up his chov, his debt. And now let's go the other way then, and let's define the Baal as the Lokeach. We just finished saying that although there's a Zchus Pidiyah from the Baal Chov, but there's no Zchus Pidiyah from the Lokeach of the Baal Chov. So if she starts a new process of Hakna on this Karka, and she transfers ownership on this Karka over to the Baal, within the framework of that transfer of ownership, which is called a Mekach, the Baal is no longer responsible to the original Lover, and therefore the Zchus Pidiyah of Shuma Hadar of the Lover no longer applies to the Baal. The Baal is not responsible to fork over this Karka and return it to its original owner, to the Lover. Now we have the flip case, where she borrowed money from someone, and that someone confiscated her Karka under the law of Shuma. She has rights to be poda her karka if she comes into cash. What happens to the Baal? Does the Baal have those same identical rights as his wife? Or do we say, no, the Baal is a brand new individual here. He purchases, so to speak, her karka under the law of Nichsei Mulug, and he has no rights as a lokeach vis-a-vis the original owner. And the original owner still has rights of Padiyah. So the Gemara says the following, that lo mahader v'lo madrinan li. Again, I'm skipping one line. B'li neder will come back to that line. And what does it mean, lo mahader v'lo madrinan li? Number one, lo mahader, which means that we view the Baal as a lokeach. He doesn't step into the shoes of his wife. And therefore, although the lover had rights vis-a-vis his malfa, meaning the isha, to redeem his karka, he doesn't have those rights vis-a-vis the Baal, because the Baal is a lokeach. And that's called lo mahader. And in the flip case, lo madrinan li, Here it works to the detriment of the Baal. He doesn't acquire and replace his wife with the rights of Pindia vis-a-vis her malva when her malva collected the karka. And the reason for these two dinim is one and the same, be Yisoda Shaldov. The Omer Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina Be'usha Et Kinu And what does this mean? That in the context of the original takana of Bezdin HaGadol B'Yerushalayim that sat in Usha, a woman who sells Nichsei Malug during the lifetime of her husband, the Baal is considered a lokeach, and therefore her sale has a certain, shall we say, limitation rule to it, and she cannot undermine the rights of the Baal. Again, there may be a temporary kinyan for a certain period of time, but ultimately the Baal has a right to get back the karka. And we see here that the status of the Baal vis-a-vis Nichsei Malug is that of a lokeach, which within the context of Shuma works either in his favor or against him. It works in his favor in that just like his wife had rights to be, you have to just ask, his wife has rights to sell the karka that she confiscated from the lova, and he, the Baal, within the framework of Nichsei Malug of marriage, now becomes the lucky buyer, such that he's now protected against the original owner, the lover, from Padiyah. So in that sense, being a lokeach works in the Baal's best interest. But again, in the flip side, where she had rights to be poda the kak that was nigbase, that the lover was gober from her, those rights that she has of zchus Padiyah are not transferred over to the Baal, because he is not stepping into the shoes of his wife as far as this karka is concerned. He's like, look, it's a brand new story. Now we skip one line. Let's go back to the line And that is, it says, Umesa, that after she got married, she died. Is Baal b'nichse ishto lokeach avi. The Chachamim gave the status of the Baal, the same status as the lokeach. His kinyan is that of a lokeach, of a buyer. He's not a yoresh. We don't say that he inherited it. Now, that's crucial when we say that he's not a yoresh. Because if they evaluated the karka of the isha, and that was collected because she owed money to someone, and therefore she has chus pedia vis-a-vis the person, the Baal Chov, to whom she was, she had a debt, her son, in the case where she married her, would inherit that schus, but right to be poded from the lova. I'm sorry, from the malva. However, the husband does not have the status of a yoresh in this case. He has the status of a lokech, and he has no relationship whatsoever to this karka with regard to this schus pedia. It's called lo madrinan le. Now let's go back to lo mihader, which means that if she collected a piece of karka, now being a lokeach works in the Baal's best interest, because no longer, after the marriage, no longer does the original owner, the lov, have rights to redeem the karka from the Baal. He doesn't have to return the karka to the Baal. And all this is going to be based on the Takonis Usha that established that the status of a Baal is that of a lokeach. And since he's a lokeach, therefore, Isha Shemachar B'nichsei Malug B'chai Baila U'mesa HaBaal Motzi Miyad HaLekuchos. Now let's understand this. If she sold this karka of Nichsei Malug during her lifetime, and during the lifetime of her husband, then now when she dies, if, let's say, her yoresh, if the Baal had the status of a yoresh, then he would have no rights to get the karka back from the lokeach, from the buyer. She legally and legitimately sold her karka to the buyer. Where do we find that a yoresh has rights to the karka that was sold by the morish, by his mother? But the answer is, in the case of a Baal, HaBaal motzi miyad alekuchos, and that's because the Chacham gave to the Baal, regarding the status of a lokeach. And insofar as he has the status of a lokeach, his connection to this karka is a very powerful one. This is called alime shibude de Baal. So let a person who buys karka from a woman who's married understand that he better investigate, because he's really putting himself into trouble over here. What do you mean you're buying karka? That karka is already sold, because in the framework of ksuba, there's something called nichsei malug, and the Baal is the lokeach. That's the nature of the takana. But the takana really warns any buyer to think more than twice before he buys karka from a married woman. But again, in terms of a yoresh, that's already a different story. But just keep in mind that when she dies, there's no habamina whatsoever that her yorshim could break up the mekach, which was a perfectly great mekach and valid sale during her lifetime. And if the Baal would have, again, the Baal has rights to Yerusha, but if we would view the Baal's rights vis-a-vis this karka in the classical Yerusha mode, then for sure he would have no ability to say to lokeach, go fly a kite. Okay, Rabbi Osar, we still have one more case now. We're on Lamed Hayom and Beis. Agbei Ihu Bechovo. Okay, let's say there was no Shuma in Bezdin on behalf of the Baal Chov, the Malveh, but rather the Malveh made a deal, struck a deal up with the Lova, and between the two of them, the Lova agreed to fork over a piece of karka in lieu of the money, the debt that he owes to the Malva. Now, what do we say in this case? You know, usually the Loves Matriach, the Malvin, are going to Beis Din with the whole hassle that we're going to learn about in detail about how Shuma works. Here, the Malvin, to his great pleasure and advantage, was able to circumvent the entire legal process, the complicated, long-winded process of collecting a piece of karka. Is Pligi Bar of Achav Ravina, Chad Omar Hadra, Chad Omar Lo Hadra. Let's start with the second Man D'Omer. Man D'Omer Lo Hadra means that since here Beis Din was not involved, so there's no Takonis Chachamim where Beis Din puts a clause into the collection of this chov on behalf of the Malva that the Lova still has rights to redeem it. Or should we say Hadra, that maybe even though Beis Din didn't get involved, certainly the logic of the Tekonis Beis Din should apply over here, because if you're telling me the Lova is granted a schus pedia in the case where they have, where the Malva has to go through the whole hassle of Beis Din, then how much more so should the Malva be willing to bequeath to the Lova schus pedia in the case where the Lova was such a great guy that he offered this karka? Let's see how the Gemara analyzes this. Man diomer lo hadra sovar hai zvini mi al yehi dami daiti denavshe agve. There are no strings attached here in the case where the Lova willingly gave over this karka to the Malva. That was an act, absolute, unconditional transferal of ownership, a transfer of ownership from the Lova to the Malva. And that's midaiti denavshe. That's with a full das. It has no, it's no different than any akno, any sale whatsoever. There's no condition that's built into the sale. When is there a condition built into the sale that the seller, in this case the Lova, whose karka was confiscated, that's only when there's a Shumas Beis Din, and Beis Din adds this condition. Man diomer hadra sovar lo zvini mi al yehu. This is not similar to your classical mechira. The Lova is not interested in selling his karka, but rather haidi agve midaite, that which the Lova on his own volition is willing to circumvent the whole process of Beis Din and allow the Malva to collect this karka. He was pretty booshed out to have to go through Beis Din, and Beis Din's now going to confiscate his karka. But he certainly understood that the Malva rightfully should allow him, the Lova, rights to redeem his karka. Now the Gemara wants to clarify if there was a Gvias Beis Din, a Shumas Beis Din, on behalf of the Malva to collect karka from the Lova in lieu of the Chov. At what point in time, because as we'll soon see, this process of confiscating the karka, the Lova, and transferring ownership over to the Malva is a very long-winded and many curves on the way. There are many different stages in the process. At what stage in this process does the Malva become the proud owner of this karka, such that if the karka appreciates or produces fruit, that belongs to the Malva? And even if I hold Shuma Hada when the Lova later on gets his karka back, it doesn't undermine the Malva's, at least for that temporary period of time, rights to produce the karka, to own and acquire ownership over the produce. When I say acquire ownership, he doesn't have to do an actual kinyan. It's a roi ashbach. I mean, it does belong to him until that so-called mecher is reversed when the Lova comes to redeem it. And here, the Gemara presents a three-way machlokes between Rabba, Abayi, and Rava. Again, there are a lot of discussions here about who said what here and what the proper girsa is. It's all based on a sugin ksubis and a tosis here, the Ravaskal Rava. Fine, that's not for us now. Let's just get down pat the three basic shitas. So the first sheet is that of Rabba, according to Agirsa. Michi Matra Matya Adrachta Liode. Now, what is this Shtar Adrachta about which we learned earlier in Bob Metzi in the first Perek, if you happen to recall? There's a Psak Din, And that psak din rules that the lova has to pay the malva. Let's say there was kiyum hashtar, you know, the malva produced a shtar. The shtar was perfectly valid and authenticated. Everything's fine and dandy, just that the lova has no money to pay. So what happens in such a case is that there's a 90-day period of time, as Rashi points out here, about five lines down from the top, L'achatishim yom mishenifsak ha-din, Bezdin writes a shtar adrachta, which not only reiterates and is a record of their psak din, but it also goes ahead and grants the malve rights to the nechasim of the lova, any nechasim of the lova, any properties and real estate of the lova, wherever he can find them. You know, he has to search the globe and find them, and he can confiscate those karkos based on the shtar adrachta that he's holding on to. Rashi says, Bezdin kosan adrachta shtar psak din anichse lovish b'chol makom shiimtem mishalo yikhem umosrim lo ashtar. On that day that Bezdin hands over the shtar to the malve, he, the malve, from that day on, from that moment on, will collect the peros of the karka, which technically still belongs to the lova. What I mean to say is that this shtar is a classical shtar raya, it's not a shtar kinyan. And if it were a shtar kinyan, you'd have problems with brera. I don't know, you'd a shtar kinyan on an unspecified object, an unspecified property. And apparently what Rava is operating with is some sort of a hefker bezdin hefker aloch, in which bezdin actually, I don't know what to call it. They give peros to the malva l'mafreya as part of the mesiras shtar adrachta. The shtar adrachta not only gives rights to the malva to find a piece of karka and acquire it, but it also gives rights to the malva from the moment of the mesiras hashtar to acquire the peros of whatever karka later on he will, you know, he will choose. And that seems to work with, you know, a kind of brera situation, because we don't know which karka he's going to. And in fact, you know, the Ritva raises arms. He says, "Eich yochal peros lifnei she yodua eiza karka yigvulo." They haven't yet specified which karka he's collecting, and he's already eating the peros that he owns. The peros that, and therefore, the Ritva comes up with a whole more complicated structure, and it would seem to be reflected here in the words of the Rabbeinu Chananel that there are two shtar drachtas. The first one is a more amorphous general one, granting the malva rights to specify and ultimately acquire a piece of karka the lova, but you know, no karka has been specified as of yet. The rights are there and the malva is holding on to the shtar drachta. But later on, at the point in which we choose a particular karka, the malva lands on a piece of karka and singles it out. At that point, they give a second, Bezdin gives a second shtar over to the malva, and that shtar becomes not only a shtar raya, proving and testifying to the rights of the malva, but it becomes a shtar kinyan through which he acquires ownership on the karka. That's how the Ritva learns this sugya. So we're talking about the second shtar adrachta, which is a shtar kinyan, once the karka has been specified. And from that moment on, clearly Rava is absolutely logical that he, the malva, acquires the peros. Abayomar edo bechasumav zochinlo. There are edim that are signed on the shtar adrachta. They are authorized to do so by the Bezdin. And what they do is, even before the shtar is handed over to the malva in this case, their chasima works as a kind of, shall we say, zochin li'olim shlo b'fanav, in which they are the long arm of the Malva to be zocha on his behalf. And this is Abai's opinion. The Rif says that the reason why Rava didn't join the bandwagon here of Abai is because he, Rava, never accepted the din of Eidah B'chasum of Zochla, which we saw back on Daf in the Sugya Daf Yud Gimel Midbeis. It was Abai who was the Baal Ashita of Eidah B'chasum of Zochla. Rava never joined the bandwagon on that Shita. The Ritva disagrees with the Rif in a very rare kind of move. And he says that our sugya here is not to be identified with the classical sugya back on Yud Gimel Amid Beis of Eidah B'chasum of Zochin Lo, because in our discussion we're not talking about the Lova authorizing a shtar chov to the Malva, and the Eidim are acquiring shibudim of the Lova's karka from the moment that they sign the shtar, even before the shtar has been transferred over to the Malva. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a Maisa Bezdin. And in the case of a Maisa Bezdin, according to Rava, this shtar is only shtar raya. Whereas a shtar milve is makne shibudim in the karka lova on behalf of the malve. That's already a different story. That's where there's a machlokas, whether Eidah B'chasum of Zochlo, or we need the Mesirus Ashtar from the Lova into the hands of the Malva. But here, Rava is saying something totally different. You know, he never bought into the fact that this Maisa Bezdin with the Shtar Drachta could serve as a Shtar, as a Shtar Kinyan. So what Shaykh has Eidah B'chasum of Zochlo on a Shtar Raya? And you get the impression here that Abai is of the opinion that since Bezdin were according to Rabbah, and Abai is going even a step further, but according to Rabbah, Bezdin are transferring ownership over the peros of this karka, whatever the karka will be, whenever it will be chosen, or the Ritva's pshat that it's a second shtar dracht after they've already singled out a karka. But in any event, the karka itself, or shall we say the mesirus hashtar liyodo shel hamalve of this shtar drachta, serves as a shtar kinyan to facilitate the possession, the acquisition on the part of the malve of the peros, and therefore by says eidah b'chasum of zochlo, because we're talking about a shtar kinyan. Rava Omar, Michi Shlimu Yemei Achrazta. Okay, now we get to the third stage in the process of confiscating and the Malvas collecting a karka and acquiring ownership of the karka in lieu of the chov. That's called Achrazta. What's Achrazta? We need a Hachraza period. That means even after the Shtar Drachta gets transferred into the hands of the Malva, the Malva now is on a journey, on a trip to find the Nechasim of the Lova and to decide which karka he wants to single out for himself. Okay, fine. Here's the karka. You know, it's on the corner of 9th and 3rd Avenue. Fine. That's the piece of property I want, says Mr. Malva. Yeah, but now there's a process of achrosa. Hachroza loosely translates into our English as a public auction. And the determination of the price of that piece of karka is the highest bidder. If the Malva could match the highest bidder, then he, the Malva, acquires ownership of this karka. So the karka is really going to be sold on the market to the highest bidder based on this hachroza, this auction, which again takes place after the Malva identifies which karka he's interested in. And the Malva now has two choices. He can either sit back passively, allow this karka to be sold by Bezdin to the highest bidder, and those monies that accrue by virtue of the sale of that karka will go to the Malva to pay for his chov, to rebate him for his loan. Or the Malva can actively get involved in this auction. He can be the highest bid, or at least match the highest bid. And in such a case, he acquires ownership over the karka once he pays for it, and he gets not only the karka, but he gets even the peros. Now Rashi, at the end of Dibra Maschil Michi Shalmu Yimei Achrazta, points out that if you want to find out how many days are the days of Achrazta, you'd have to check the sugya in Masechta Erchin. And Rashi points out that until that deadline is reached, when the, you know, they take the highest, they determine who is the highest bidder, and no more bids after that, the peros up until that point are in the possession of the lofer. From that point, when the Yimei Achrazta terminate, now the Malva owns the peros henceforth, and you get the impression that the Malva hasn't even yet made a kinyan on the karka. If he made a kinyan on the karka, then that's poshut that he collects the peros. But we want to, the whole premise of the Gemara, maybe it's like Achil Peri, is that he, the Malva, can acquire ownership over the peros even before he makes a final kinyan on the peros. And all this works midin hefker bezdin hefker. Let's look at the Mishnah here on Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis. Hasocher para mechavero v'shilo li'acher. So Reuven owns a cow. Shimon rents the cow. He's paying rental fees, and now he lends it to Levi. Shimon is the socher, the renter, and Levi is the borrower. Umesa kidarka, and the animal died in the possession of the shoel. Now, under these circumstances, the shoel will have to pay, because the only thing he's potter for is Mesa Machmas Malocha. Yishoveh HaSocher Shemesa Kedarka. Again, we're assuming now, and we'll look into this later, of course, that the Socher was there when the animal died, and he therefore takes an oath that the animal died of old age. And that patters him up, because the socher is not chayev for onsim, but the shoel is chayev for onsim. Vashoel yishalim l'socher. In other words, there was a relationship here between the socher and the shoel. There was no relationship between the shoel and its original owner. So Levi has nothing to do with Reuven. His chiyuv sheila is vis-a-vis Shimon the socher, and Shimon is kind of like the bailim of this para, even though he doesn't really own it, but he rented it out, and through schiris he has a certain element of kinyan on the para. So the shoel is now chayev to him, to the socher. And that's what's going to happen here. The shoel is chayev for onsim, he has to pay the socher. Rabbi Yossi objects. He said, Ketzad Allah osep schorib parasa shalavero. How is it possible that the para that's owned by the maskir, let's call him Reuven, not by Shimon, that the shoel should pay Shimon, and Shimon is making a profit on the cow that's not his but belongs to someone else, meaning to the mash, to the mafkid, to the maskir? Can you take someone's para and sell it and make a profit on it? El tachzer para lebaila, meaning the shoel has to pay directly to the maskir. Now, we didn't get up to Tosus Agra yet, but let's just point out that one element of this Tosus we could take with us even at this point in the Mishnah, and that is that the socher is not out of the picture here, even when he lends it to the shoel. And let's even argue that the socher rented it for 100 days and now he lends it out to the shoel for 100 days. That still doesn't liquidate or neutralize the socher. The socher is not out of the picture. And the socher has chiyuvim and achrayis, which means that the shoel does not take over it doesn't void those chiyuvim. For example, Well, what would be a situation where the shoel would be potur, and yet the socher would still be chayev? That's called baila of imo. Okay, we'll get to that later, but there's a technical tour of a shoel called in baila of imo. Let's say the shoel was baila of imo, and therefore you would not have to pay anything to the socher. Let's say if the socher is in the employment of the shoel, and the socher is still chayev for gnei vaveda, or for pshia, and therefore the fact that the shoel is potter doesn't in any way exonerate the socher from his chiyuvim. So that's what Tosfos points out, that there's no bitul aschirus here. The schirus is still very much alive and well. Now, Tosfos Divar Maskil Tachzar addresses the svara of Rabbi Yossi here. And there was one possibility which Tosfos wanted to reject outright. You could have said that the logic of Rabbi Yossi is that the maskir, the original owner, says to the socher, "Parasi gabach, my para is in your possession." And what does that mean, parasi gabach? The shoel, after all, in Mesa Kedarik, has to pay. If, as we saw in the Chacham Tanakama, the money, the payment is given over to the socher, that payment represents or replaces the par itself. The socher has to return the par to the maskir. If he can't do so, then let him at least return the bimkom par, meaning the domin that he got from the shoel. So Tosfos says that this interpretation of Yossi is not correct. And for this we'd have to see a sugya way, way later on in Masechta Bava Metzia. The sugya there is quite clear that in a situation where the she'ela was bebailim, and therefore the shoel is potur, the socher would certainly have to pay the maskir. So we're not saying that the reason why the maskir comes to the socher is because the socher is picking up the domim, which represents and replaces the para from the shoel. That's not so. There's a direct chiyuv on the socher vis-a-vis the maskir. And therefore Tosfos concludes that the underlying logic of Rabbi Yossi is because the maskir has a right to say to the socher, Dal ant v'dal shvuasach v'ana mishta'ina dina bahadi shoel, which is going to be the question of Rav Idi Bar Oven in the Gemara. Let's read the Gemara. Omale Rav Idi Bar Oven labaye michti socher b'may kani lehai para b'shvua. If the, as the Mishnah says, the maskir demands a shvua, and the socher can cough up that shvua, he can give the maskir the shvua that he's demanding, that the animal indeed mesa kedarka, then as a result of that shvua, according to the Chachomim Rav Yossi, the socher now acquires ownership over this para, and therefore the shoel has to pay the socher. Namele, why can't the maskir say to the socher, Dal ant v'dal shvuasach, you know what? I don't want you or your shvua. V'ano mishta'ina dina b'hadi shoel. I rather go directly to the shoel, who's chayv ba'onsim, and let him pay me this para. Why do the chachamim insist that the deal over the payment of the para is between the socher and the shoel? In other words, the shoel is also a shomer of the bailim, because in effect he's taking the par of the bailim and he's now obligated in shmira, and that should give the maskir rights to go directly to the shoel. With regard to the extra or increment of chiyuv that he has more than the socher's chiyuv, like for example onsim, in that context, he, the shoel, is the shomer of the socher. In other words, the relationship between the Shoel and the Bailim, the original owner, meaning the Maskir, is not one of a Chiyuv Onsim, because the Maskir never gave the Shoel any rights to use the object, to use the Para. Those rights were granted to the Shoel by the Socher. So the Chiyuv Onsim for She'ela incumbent upon the head of the Shoel, that's vis-a-vis the Socher. But what Rav Idi Barovin is asking is that the Maskir has a right to say to the Socher, who, you know, the Socher would normally be off the hook, so to speak, be alleviated from his responsibility by taking the Shavuah of Mesa Kedarka, that, you know what? Says the Maskir, I'm not interested in your Shavuah. You're still mechuyev. Meaning you, the Socher, still mechuyev to me, because you haven't yet taken the Shavuah, and I don't want your Shavuah. And then, if the Socher is still in the picture, then the Maskir could be Tovea, he could claim directly to the Shoel. Why? Because the Socher is not taking the Shavuah. As long as the Socher doesn't take the Shavuah, he's considered the Shomer to the Bailim. So the linkage here between the Maskir, the owner, and the Shoel, the borrower, is the Socher in the middle. As long as the Socher is still considered the Shomer of the Bailim, then the Shoel is also considered the Shomer of the Bailim, because the Shoel is standing as a representative of the Socher, in a sense. This is, right? And he's got Chiyuv Shmira. The Socher wants to drop out of this picture, and he no longer serves this go-between as the linkage, because he's taking the Shavuah. But the Maskir has a right, says Rav Idi Barovin, to say, I don't want your Shavuah, and as long as I don't want your Shavuah, you still remain chayev to me, and therefore the Shoel remains chayev to me. Amaleis, Abai says to Rav Idi, Mi Savris, do you really think that... And by the way, and here's what we wanted to mention before, but we got caught up in the middle and distracted. This Tosfos Dibur Maskil Tachzor is going to claim that herein, meaning in the question of Idi, lies the Shita of Rav Yossi. What underlies the Shita of Rav Yossi is that the Maskir has a right to say to the Socher, I don't want your Shavuah, therefore you remain Chayef to me. And you now serve as the linkage, allowing me, says the Maskir, to have a direct claim against the Shoel. Amalei, now Abai wants to respond to Rav Idi and protect the sheet of the Chachamim here in our Mishnah. Mi savres socher b'shvuah hu dekakani lei, mishas misa hu dekani hu shvuah, kidei lahafis daito shel balabayis. Abai says that your premise, Rav Idi, is that at what point does the Socher acquire ownership over this para in such a way that he can now come as the owner and sue the Shoel for damages, because as we said before, the Shoel is chayev for misa for onus. You're assuming, Rav Idi, that clincher of the Socher is through the Shavuah. And once the Socher takes the Shavuah, now at this point the Para belongs to him, and therefore the Shoel, according to the Chachamim, pays the Socher. No, that's not so. In fact, the Kinyan on the Para takes place immediately at the Shas Misa. Again, we may not know about the Shas Misa. We have no evidence in court yet to establish the Misa, meaning the Misa Kedarka. But it's the Misa Kedarka that allows the Socher to acquire ownership over the Para, and now to be Tovea the Shoel. Ah, you'll ask me, why do we need the Shavuah? That's Kedei Lahafis Daito Shel Balabayas, to calm down the Maskir, who thinks that maybe there was some foul play over here that caused the death of his cow. So we have here a Chakira question and a Machlokas Tanoim about this. At what point does the Socher acquire zchusim to be tovea the shoel, and the shoel have to pay up the socher? Is it from the moment that he takes the shvua, or no? Immediately with the death of the animal, it was mesa kedarka. At that point, the socher owns the. He doesn't have to deal with the maskir anymore. He's part because mesa kedarka. Now, immediately upon the death of the animal, this socher has rights to be mashil the para to such an extent that the shoel has to pay for the death of the animal to the socher. No. Is it is it until he takes the shvua? And Reb Yossi may be saying over here, Ketzad Allah Osa Schor Paras Shavir means that the shvua is never going to be forthcoming. The mafkid is not going to take the shvua from the socher. Again, what would be in a case where, let's say, there were edim who were made that the para died kedarka? In that case, the socher never had a chiyuv shvua. According to Rabbi Yossi, that the socher could claim money from the shoel if he takes a shvua, but if the mafkid releases him from the shvua, then the maskir has rights to, according to Rabbi Yossi, to be tover directly the shoel. Then kolshken, if the socher never had a chiyuv shvua to begin with, because there are edim that testify of mesa kedarka, how much more so would the mafkid, according to Rabbi Yossi, be able to be tover the shoel directly? Okay, now the Gemara is going to go on here and discuss a few more complicated cases in which there's a socher who lends a shoel, and the shoel now rents it out to somebody else. Okay, let's just see. Omrav Zera, pa'omim shabayla mishalmim kama paris l'socher. Wow, this is pretty wild. There are cases in which the owner of the shor will have to pay the socher. Hechi domi, how is that possible? Agraminei mea yomi. Let's say the rental agreement was for 100 days. Vehodar shaila minei tishim yomi. And now the owner has a need to use this para. So what he's going to do is he's going to borrow it from the socher for the first 90 days of those 100 days. Now, does that mean that for that 90-day period, the entire schiris is batel umevutal? And it could be very possible, and that's why the Gemara insists that there's still a 10-day, you know, there's the increment of 10 days of schiris beyond the 90 days. So fine. So now you have a socher, and now the bailim is also a socher. Hadar agra minei tamnun utmanun yomi. Okay, now this is really interesting. The socher decides that he needs this para. And therefore he goes back and he rents the para for 80 of those 90 days. And again, the original socher who rented it for 90 days, which is the original bailim, he's not out of the picture, because again, we still have that 10-day increment at the end of this period. V'hadar shayli minei shivin yomi. Now the owner borrows it for the renter for 70 of the 80 days. Umesa b'tok shei losa. And keep in mind that the shoel is chayef for misa kedarka, meaning for onsim, and Rav Zera paskins here the akol she'ela u'she'ela mechayev chada para. Very strange halacha over here. There's one para, but yet there are many chiyuvim vis-a-vis that one para, because there was a she'ela and then another she'ela. So the first she'ela of the Bailam was the 90-day period, and then the renter rented out the para from the shoel for 80 days, and now the shoel, who's the original owner, borrowed it for 70 out of the 80 days. So there's a double chiyuv she'ela for the first for 90 and the second for 70, and he's got to pay up a para for each one of those she'elos. And as we look at the das hamischayev of the she'ela, and the first she'ela, you know, is no longer relevant to the second she'ela. It's only relevant insofar as there was this chayvus that he'll have to pay for onsim. So it comes out that the, you know, there's like a duplication over here. What do I mean by duplication? There is a chiyuv she'ela once, and there's a chiyuv she'ela twice. Both cases, it was the owner of the para who was the shoel, right? So the owner of the para as a shoel has to pay two cows. Now, who does he have to pay the two cows to? To the socher, because according to the sheet of the Chachom and Mishnah, the shoel is chayv to the socher. The socher did a very good deal over here because he kept renting it back from the Bailim, and allowing himself a period of time of she'elo where the shoel is going to be chayv to him, to the socher, demei apara b'toras onsim, because the shoel is chayv in onsim. Rav Achi doesn't understand this. He says, "Michti chada paro." You know, there's only one cow over here. How can you pay more than once for one cow? I leave the afke. In other words, it went into a certain state. Aili means it went up. The afke went out of that state. Afke mischirus v'aili l'sheila. Afke mischeila v'aili l'schirus. In other words, once the schirus turned into a she'ela, now it's in a state of she'ela. The she'ela turns into schirus, now it's in a state of schirus. Until finally we get the last period of she'ela. Okay, that can generate a chiyuv, but that's only one para. So basically, according to the svara of Rav Acha, one cow was rented in schirus and then it was borrowed in she'ela. So the owner, who's now a shoel, he has to only pay for one cow if it's lost. Now the Rishonim point out that according to Rav Zera's Svara, that there's a shela number one and shela number two, and each shela generates a chiyuv in and of itself to pay the socher, a para, in Mesa Kedak and Onsim. There's an additional chiyuv to cover the bailim, meaning the owner, who's now the shoel, and was also the maskir. So b'toras shoel, he's got to pay these two paras according to Rav Zera. But b'toras maskir, he's got to replace this para that died with a para for the first she'ela, which is 10 days, because again, keep in mind, the original rental agreement was for 100 days, and there are still 10 days, you know, even after the she'ela, there's still a 10-day period of schirus that does exist. The shoel has to provide that 10 days. In the next round, in the 80 versus 70, again a 10 days. So at the end of the day, in addition to paying the socher as a shoel for two paros, one for each she'ela that's a machayev unto itself, he's also got to provide other paros for the socher, insofar as he's a maskir who had a commitment to offer the socher X number of days of schiris, for which the socher actually paid as a renter. And here we have machlokes between Rav Zera and Ravina. A machlokes between Rav Zera and Rav Acha Midifti. According to Rav Zera, each she'ela is an independent entity and a machayev. For example, if during the course of the first she'ela, which was a 90-day period, the animal would have died, then the shoel b'toras shoel has to pay the socher b'toras mashil for that mesa kedarka. Okay, the animal didn't die, but it doesn't matter. Ultimately, the animal did die. So it doesn't matter when the animal died. You know, the date of death on the certificate of death is irrelevant. Now there was a second she'ela because the socher went back and he paid to acquire another ownership of schirus. And within the context of the second she'ela, the animal died. There was still a chiyuv for the first she'ela. That's Rav Zera's opinion. Rav Achami Difti cannot tolerate that with one para there could be multiple chiyuvei tashlumen. Amalei, Saravina, to whom the question, the objection of Rav Acha was addressed, turns back to Rav Acha and he says, "Umi isal para bi'ene dinemalei hachi," meaning if the para was alive and well, then the show would be potul gamrei. But the para is not alive, and he's got to return the para to the socher, who's the maskir in this case. Well, I shouldn't say the maskir, the socher who's the mashil. And if he can't do so, and again, let's reemphasize, why do the chiyuvim of the socher still exist? Because the socher was mashil only for a 90-day period, allowing himself the extra, we call the increment of 10 days. And therefore, there's a chiyuv on the part of the shoel to pay the socher who's the mashil for that death of the para. And the socher as a mashil has two independent tviyos for each agreement separately. And therefore the shoel, who's the original bailim, has to pay for each tviyo. Mabra Vashi Omar, Ein lo aleim ela shtei paros. The socher could only claim maximum of shtei paros, and now Rav Ashi is going back to the taina of Rav Ada Midifti, and it would mean that the owner of the animal has to give the socher maximum two paros, chada de she'ela v'chada de schirus. What does the shoel, who's the bailim, have to provide for the socher? Number one, he's got to provide one para. Again, now we're going with the svara of Acha, that for one para you can only mechayev domim once, and that domim the shoel is chayev for because he's chayev for onsim. V'chada, he's got to give him another para, the schirus, because he owes him 20 days of schirus. And Rav Ashi explained, Mab Rav Ashi explains himself a little further. He says, shum shela achasi v'shum schira achasi. Notice, if it's only one para, then there's only one shela, but it's twice two shelos for one para. And in such a case, two shelos for one para could only generate a chiyuv for paying for one para. And on the schirus, well, he's got to provide him with a para for 20 days. The she'ela kani legamrei, the schirus oved bei yimei schiruso mehedela leilamare. As far as the chiyuv of the shol for she'ela is concerned, the para itself now, and well, the para is dead, but at least its payment belongs to the socher. And as far as the para of the schirus is concerned, after the 20-day period in which the socher gets to complete his, you know, schirus, his rental enjoyments, then mahadale lamare. Now the par goes back to its owner. So basically what we're left with is Marba Rav Ashi adopting the position of Rav Acha. We have, on the other hand, Ravina's position, which is the same identical position as Rava, as Rav Zera, excuse me, namely that there's a machayev for each Sheila unto itself. Let's just summarize before we close the shiur. Rav Zera and Ravina are of the opinion that the renter paid two rents, and there are two separate agreements of rental. The shoel is a double she'ela, because on the base of each she'ela, he rented the cow to the socher, and he actually collected money for that. So that each she'ela really must stand on its own. It's got to be an independent she'ela. Haraya, through the she'ela, the shoel was able to be a maskir to rent it to the socher and collect money for that. And therefore, if each she'ela is an independent, shall we say, an independent machayev and an independent agreement, that basically it's the equivalent of two borrowed cows. That's what we really have over here. And therefore, for each she'ela, the shoel has to pay for mesa kedarka to the socher. That's the shita of Rav Zera and Ravina. On the other hand, we have Rav Acha and Marva Rav Ashi. They maintain that it's really the same cow that was rented and borrowed. It's only one cow. And therefore, the owner, the Bala Hapara, as a shoel, doesn't have to pay more than one compensation for the loss of that single cow. Again, you know, in addition to that compensation for the loss of the cow, he's got to pay him, so to speak, compensation for the loss of 20 days of schirus, which means he's got to provide a cow for the period of 20 days, because that's the terms of his eschivus as a maskir, that's for sure. So again, whereas according to the first day, which we identified as Rav Zera and Ravina, we have two different claims. In other words, the socher has a claim to the shoel under the damage of the first she'ela, and he has a separate independent claim. He can be tovea dmei para for the second ischayvus of the second she'ela. And each one is a separate independent demand for payment. And Haraya, had it been two cows, he would certainly be, everybody would agree that he can collect for the, you know, pay him for those two cows for each respective she'ela. And here's where Rav Acha Midifti and Mab Rav Ashi disagree. They can't imagine that you could have two hischayvus of she'ela on the very same cow. And basically each hischayvus on that she'ela is to return the cow. If the cow is dead, then you return its domim. And maybe essentially the machlokas here revolves around how you understand Tashlume Nezikin in the case of a shoel, but it could go beyond Sheila, all of Nezikin. Are you viewing it as a replacement of the animal? And if there's only one animal, then you can only expect that it be replaced once. Or is Tashlume Nezikin a separate mischayev? Certainly in the case of Shomrim, who are Makabal on the cells of Chrayus, and separating, you can really separate between the first she'ela and the second she'ela, because as we said before, after each she'ela there was a rental agreement by which the socher actually paid the shoel, who now becomes a mashiel. That seems to prove conclusively that there's two separate machayvim, two separate she'elos, even though it's both on the same part. Now the Gemara, now at this point, which we're not going to be able to study in this year, describes different chiyuvim of a shvua and a different chatos that that if somebody takes a shvua sheker, he has to bring a korban chatos. The Mirtz Hashem will pick up tomorrow.